Hi Claire.
Hi, Chris.
How are you?
I'm all right. How are you doing?
I'm really good, thank you. Claire, thank you so much for joining me on the Employer Bland podcast. I want to make it really clear to everybody listening, I've been trying to get you on this podcast for about 18 months, and we're here today. We are here.
Wow. In
I
the
know, but we obviously speak sporadically and there's been a lot going on in the world, and but it's I've been so keen to get you on because I'm such a fan of the work that you do, particularly, and I'll hand over to you in a moment, but particularly the work you've been doing in the EB space. So that's probably a really nice segue actually for me to to hand over to you. But Claire D'Souza, co-founder of the EB space, before we kick into our main conversation, could you give everybody listening a little bit of an intro to the EB space?
Sure. So it's a global community for employer brand professionals. My co-founder, Alex, we started it in February last year, 2023. And over the course of about 18 months, we've grown it to 600 plus people across 45 countries. So it's essentially an
Wow.
online community. Everyone just speaks to each other, gives each other advice. We've got different threads, and it's essentially just a way of supporting each other. We share jobs, we share opportunities, we ask people for advice. Like, it's just a way of connecting.
Amazing. And kudos to you and Alex, because those 600 plus members, I bet that's just kind of happened. Is that just been like a snowball effect in the background that you should have been expecting that? And I can see exactly why that's happened because of who you both are and your profiles and all the great work you do. But do you just see that number ticking in the background and growing in these countries, like country by country, just onboarding?
But we didn't see it happen to start with. So when we started it, our problem statement was we want to create something that's global, that feels global, that everybody can just connect with, and that's easy to use on a platform, that's really accessible on a phone, on your computer, or whatever. And then it sort of exploded. So when we ask people to sign up, so we want to make sure that everyone who is in the space actually does employer brand work. We hadn't actually asked anyone for a location, so we were saying, where are people based? So I ended up going through everyone's LinkedIn profiles and literally looking at where people were and mapping out every location. And as I was going through these locations, it's like, we can't have 45. But then I was looking at someone who was in Botswana, some other people who are in Vietnam, Singapore, Australia, Germany. Like, we are actually truly global, and that's really exciting. And but also really excited to see how much employer branding is growing in companies, how many professionals there are at different places, and how important it's becoming to companies to have it.
That is and you know what, on that point, I think for me that's the most exciting thing, because I think if you look at employer branding over the last few years particularly, there is a narrative sometimes it's not growing as quickly as we want it to grow. There are these small teams in enormous companies, they need to be bigger. But it's kind of getting a sense check on communities like the community that you and Alex are building. It does give you that, like, a bit of a global sense check that everything is moving in the right direction. It is growing, it is getting bigger, and it's doing what we need it to do. So, well, yeah, kudos to you both anyway. You're doing some amazing things. And
Thanks.
I know I'm not here to promote the EB space, but from afar, I massively admire what you're both doing. So and I look forward to to the events and stuff that you've got going on in the near future. So Claire, today we are going to be talking about debunking some common employer brand myths. So we'll get straight into it. I've got a few here listed, and we'll just go through them if you're cool with that, like one at a time. So look, the first one I wanted to tackle with you, and look, you might, for some of these, you might tell me it's not a myth and actually it's completely real. So feel free to challenge that as well. But the first one is, employer branding has a clear blueprint that every company can follow. Firstly, are we in agreement that that is a myth?
Yes.
Brilliant.
I think it's really easy to go in, and I see it happen a fair bit. You go into a new company and you're like, I've got my tried and tested ways of doing things, got my strategy, I'm going to do it like straight away. But every company is different, and it's really understanding what your company needs are. And you might have different tools, different things that you might look at. So there'll be standard things like these, the reports that you might get. You might have your website reports, you might have your social reports, whatever it might be. You might have your tried and tested things, but it doesn't mean you're going to do them all in the same order that you did before. Like at one company, I used to do this really, really in-depth Glassdoor report. I was really proud of it, but that company was really interested in their reputation and what people were saying about them, really leveraging like how to increase their score. In another company, they really didn't care because it was just too big and it wasn't that important. And so the 5 hours that I'd spend on this report, this was before ChatGPT, but it's so much time I spend on it, I realized, oh, okay, I was going to do that, but actually it's just not important here. So it goes off my list of things to do. It's there as a potentially nice to have, but it's just not important anymore. Yeah. I think it's just reminding yourself that when you go into any sort of employer brand role, you're going to have, and you're bringing with you the set of unique skills, your set of unique experiences and things that you can bring to the table, but you're going to have to constantly adapt to how you bring those and how you utilize them at every place you're working. Yeah. And also when you're in that job, things are going to change all the time. So, you know, your tried and tested approach might have worked for 3 companies, but then you might go into somewhere else and you're like, oh, this organization does not care about A, B, and C. They care about E and F. So actually, I can focus my efforts over there. Yeah. And it's aligning and really understanding what your business wants, what they care about, what their bottom line is, and how you can make sure that everything you're doing lines up to that. And I think that's where it can get quite exciting, but also reminding yourself that you've got to be really adaptable. The more adaptable you are, the better it is for the employer brand that you're going to be like defining and creating.
Yeah, such a good point. Did you think as well there can be a common kind of, I wouldn't say a mistake that's been, you know, that can be made, but, you know, something that can be overlooked where, you know, employer brand is actually, it's an enormous thing. You know, a lot of people sometimes look at employer branding for talent attraction, you know, and that's kind of it. And it's like, okay, so we know that we've got this hiring plan next year and we want to onboard, you know, 10 people, 100 people, you know, 400, whatever the number might be, kind of irrelevant to a degree. But everything around their employer brand is focused on how do we attract that talent, and their entire plan, their personal blueprint is wrapped around and so laser focused on how are we going to attract on onboard those people. And then there's almost disregard's probably too strong. It's not a disregard, but completely overlooking that actually employer brand is also about who's in the business today, values and all this other, you know, so many other things that sit under the umbrella of employer brand. But do you think that can be a common kind of thing that's overlooked, where it's not looking at employer brand holistically enough when you're putting a blueprint together?
I think it's easy to always look at the outside, and to take a careers website as an example, people will always focus on the external website. They will always be, you know, they'll put all of their eggs in that basket, how great it looks externally. Then internally, if you're looking at social mobility, if you're saying, and you've got a narrative internally that you want to, you have career growth and mobility and all of those sorts of things, but all you have internally is a talent marketplace, then externally you've served your candidates, but internally you haven't served your candidates, who also happen to be your employees and the people that work with you, because all you've given them is this talent marketplace. You've not really given them the bells and whistles that you've given people who have no affinity to your brand, whereas all these people that have already got this affinity to your brand and you want to show them the art of the possible, but you're not giving them that at all. So I think sometimes you can focus so heavily on the external that you forget the internal, and you can forget that you're the people that you work with every day are your potential like candidates as well, because if you want them to stay in the business, and it goes into that, you know, retaining talent, you want to be able to progress, go into different roles, seek new opportunities. You want to keep that great skill set in there for as long as you can, but you have to open up the opportunity, but you have to show them where their opportunity is. And if you don't service them at that very basic level, they're not going to know that it's there, because you're not telling them or shouting about it, or you're not opening their eyes to what the opportunity could be. So I think that is forgotten. I think sometimes internal's not really talked about enough, where you go, oh, that's just employee experience. Well it is, but you're talking about your whole employer brand. It's like with a consumer brand, you don't just think about it for one pocket or something, you think about how everybody shops. So it's like thinking about it more holistically.
Yeah, such a good point. So on this point, you know, if there are people out there that are kind of, you know, looking at embarking on a journey of like, okay, we need to get down to work and we need to create our own individual personal blueprint for like what we attack first, where we go. You know, the theme of what we're talking about with this particular question is everyone's unique. Everyone has their own goals, their own aspirations, their own kind of mountain to climb as such. So what would your kind of overarching kind of advice be, I suppose, to maybe an employer brander that's kind of fairly new to what they're doing, that is thinking, right, where do I start with this business? You know, what do I start to try and pick off the list first?
I think there's a couple of bits there. I think your first bit is really listening. And I mean, listening not just to what people are saying, but also what people are not saying. Listening to a narrative in the market. So if, for example, if you've got a brand that has a heavy consumer brand, what the press might be saying about you, what other people might be saying about you, what review sites are saying about you, it's listening to the things that you need. So if you've got a role that encompasses both employer brand and recruitment marketing, it's saying, okay, what do I need to make this person successful? Yeah. Also knowing that, you know, your employer brand, you need something that helps your normal hiring activity. So do you have something today that helps you hire today and tomorrow? And if not, where are your sticky fixes? So it's, I guess what I always do is I have a bit of a board, which is like, here's my sticky plaster fix. Here's my long-term thing. So here I'm going to fix the, all these analogies. But if I think about it, either as a tree or a house or something, but you know, if I think about it as a tree, here are the leaves that I can look at now and go and spray and they'll be green again. Here's the stuff that I need to get to the root of. And so the sticky plaster fix, I can sort that out quickly, but I know that I'll need to go and really think about how I can fix it. So where I've done, for example, a website project before, I knew that the website for that particular company had to really be looked at, but it had to be looked at with a lot of detail. So I did lots of sticky plaster fixes, and we got to a point where we did so many sticky plaster fixes, the website then was like at a point where it's going to break now. Like we've got so many sticky plaster fixes that if we sticky plaster fix something over here, something else over there is going to break. So we got to the point where like, now we really need to make sure we're scoping out what this site looks like. But whilst we're looking at all those little fixes, we're looking at, okay, what do we actually want to say?
Yeah.
This business, how do we really want to bring it to life? What does new website give us tomorrow that we don't have today? And we had all that time to bring it to life, and we got it live in quite a short frame of time. But it's just understanding what you go after now versus what needs to be a longer term project. Also, who you want to get involved. It's easy to walk into a business where you've got legacy relationships, legacy, this person does this and that person does that. And actually, if you just reset something and rather than look at people, look at the skills that you need. So when you're delivering a program or you're delivering something, it's like, who do I need in this room from a skill set perspective to deliver, to make sure this is a success? So perhaps for one of your larger organizations, you might be looking at bigger teams, you know, like bigger teams, you've got different places over there. For a small organization, you might want to bring your comms and marketing teams on board, which, you know, typically you'll hear people say, well, there's conflict between comms and marketing. And I'm like, great, there should always be healthy tension. That's a really good thing.
Yeah.
But ultimately, you're both trying to work to a positive thing. You're both trying to protect your brand. You're both trying to do something. So if they understand your point and you understand their point, and you both work together on something that's a shared goal, then actually you bring everybody on the journey with you, and that can be quite exciting. But it's just, I say listening to a really big thing, and then looking for gaps. So where are the gaps that you're like, actually we need to do something over here, we have to do something over there. But then project, like, just look at your timelines and stuff. So how long is it going to take you to do something? And then also, before you do any of it, what does a business want? So actually, what's the business going after right now? Are they really going to care about this stuff that I'm going after? Or do they really care about stuff over here? Like, some businesses really care about vanity metrics and social media metrics and what your engagement is and your content is. And they really care about it. They care about how many visitors you get on your website. Others don't, because if you're wanting to create value, for example, I don't think a CFO or a board is going to care about the amount of engagement a LinkedIn post gets. But They might care about how your activity impacts their operation, whether it's in a positive or negative way, and how it can, you know, so I think it's really thinking about, does your goal align to the business's goals? And if not, how do you make sure that it does, and how do you adapt to it? So you're always working towards one shared vision and one shared purpose. But also, if you do that, you'll always get buy-in for what you're doing, because you're not going off on your own tangent. You're addressing what needs to be fixed to support your team, but then you're also making sure that you've got buy-in for everything that you're doing, because you're saying, well, I'm hearing you, I'm understanding what you need, now I'm going to implement stuff, and you're going to support me because I'm ultimately helping the business.
Yeah, such a good point. And I think it's so often so easy to assume you know what the business wants, because you've one or two conversations with some people, you're led down a particular path.
Yeah.
But like you've kind of said there and recommended there, you know, listen and speak to as many people as possible, because you get a proper sense check, I suppose, in that way, don't you? Of like, you know, speaking to one or two people is great, but that's a fraction of the advice you should probably be getting hold of for the entire strategy that you want to put in place. So great advice. Love the sticky plaster list and the root cause list as well, because it seems like such a simple analogy but really powerful, because I can imagine you look at that sticky plaster list sometimes and you're like, although that's good stuff and it's stuff that's moving the needle, it's also stuff you should have half an eye on, that, you know, is there safety and bubble wrapped around those sticky plaster things, or is that a sticky plaster thing that could actually drop off and cause me a problem soon because it hasn't been looked after well enough.
Sticky plasters can be hard, I think, because sometimes you can have far too many sticky plasters, and especially if you're a solo employer, Brandon, and most people are. Like, I'm extraordinarily lucky to have a team now, but for most of my career in employer branding, I've been on my own, and that's not a bad thing. But when you are in a solo role, you have to be having one eye on the operation and one eye on future focus and having more of a strategic mindset. And strategic mindset can be a bit of a buzzword, but really what I mean is you have to know the big picture, and you have to be able to be fixing things at the same time. And that's really not a skill that many people can do really, really well. Yeah. And employer branders that I meet are able to do it, which I think is what makes this industry so unique and quite exciting. But you have to know both. And so if you have way too many sticky plasters, you're going to spend all your time in the operation.
Yeah.
You're going to burn out pretty quickly because you're never future focused, and you're never going to get to those really big programs that actually, when you get to them, they wipe off half the sticky plasters. And those big programs, it's also accepting, if we're going to do this, I'm not touching now any of those sticky plasters for X number of months or weeks, because actually this is going to fix all those sticky plasters. And it's being comfortable knowing that people aren't going to like it, because actually you're not able to fix stuff quickly, but you've got to make that decision. You've got to make that prioritization call to say, I want to go after this. But it's also just making sure you've got your feet in both camps. So making sure that you don't go after so many things, which is so many sticky plasters, and you're saying, okay, there's so many low hanging fruits, my basket's overloaded. Actually, it's saying what's right. So there might be 100 low hanging fruits, 100 sticky plasters, but what does the business need, and what should I go after right now, and what makes sense right now? And sometimes in some places, what I've done is I've listed out every single thing. And then when I've revised, I go back to this list every month, and every time I'm having a touch point with my leaders, and we're like, okay, we're going to do this month. Okay, we're going to move that next month. So we're always moving it. So I've never ever had any sort of strategy or a plan that stays the same. I've had my higher level focus, but I've always known what I'm doing. And the other bit is knowing your business. So can you ask yourself, what's your business purpose? Can you parrot it? Do you know it in the back of your mind? Do you know it really well? If you don't know it really well, then know that really well. Because if you've got that in the back of your mind, and then you have all your sticky plasters and your goals, you're going to start to understand how they both align.
Yeah, love that. Love that. Okay, so next myth that we're going to try and debunk. Employer branding is just about content. I'm assuming from everything you've said so far, you agree that that's a myth.
100%, yeah. I think in this one, a lot of people focus on the content. Even when you're activating something, it's tends to be a, we need content here and we need content there and we need content over here. Mm. And actually, sometimes it's so much bigger than that. So it's about the experience that you're creating. It's, and this probably ties into one of our other myths, but actually, if you think about, just to do another analogy, if you walk into a shop, right? And before you walk into the shop, you've got no, you know, you've got no opinion on what you think of this store, but you, it's fairly neutral. But you walk into the shop and you're looking for your favorite sandwich, you can't find it. You ask someone for help and they're a bit rude to you or a bit abrupt and like, oh, that's not great. So you look, go and look for maybe your favorite pack of biscuits, you can't find that either. So you've walked into the shop, you don't really have a, an opinion on their consumer brand or their brand at all, but the experience you're having in the shop, because you can't find what you need, is just not great. Then someone's just not being very helpful to you. That's even not, that's not great at all. Then you go to pay for something that you find at the checkout and something's not working. And so you're leaving feeling really frustrated with this one experience that you've had, this one interaction that you've had. And so suddenly a, this neutral opinion becomes negative because you're like, well, why am I doing that? Another example I've got is when I used to shop at this online brand, but I still shop there, but I shop at this online brand. Had a really horrible experience where, you know, a period of time when my little brother was very ill, my uncle and my grandfather passed away in a very short period of time. And I hadn't gone actually back to my house, the home that I lived in. So I didn't have any clothes to wear for this, for a funeral. So I'd ordered stuff online. It hadn't come. So I'd written and I'd been like, just wanted to get some clothes. Like, you know, and I was quite disappointed in this brand. I hadn't got the right experience from it. And I was feeling quite negative about it. And so then I had to go back to my house, which I'd not been in for a month, ahead of going to this funeral. And I go back and this company had, my housemate at that time was like, have you ordered something? I said, no, not ordered anything. It's, you've got about 40 packages there. They basically given me everything that I'd ever favorited, ordered, anything that was in my style, they'd used it. Like, and I was there looking at these packages and I was like, oh, so my negative opinion had been swayed by a really positive experience. And this handwritten note from their CEO saying she was sorry. I was like, wow, that's amazing.
My word.
It's all the experience of it. And I think when you then think about your employer brand, when somebody interacts with your website and there might be something that doesn't load on there, or they might not be able to find the right job because your filters might not be right. Or if it's internally, they want to apply for something, but they can't get hold of the right recruiter. They can't get any information about the job. Yeah. All of that is like, well, why do I want to work there? And you're creating this experience all the time. So content isn't always going to answer that. Yeah. So actually, if you've got a really good, strong employer brand, and you're shaping it and you're creating it, that's around like all of the attraction.
Yeah.
EVP goes much further because that's your EVP is your entire value exchange across your whole like employee life cycle, not just your attraction, but it's like, okay, what's your assessment? What's your reward? What's all of it? Like, how does that all come together? But if you're just thinking about your employer brand, you want people to come away with like that good, like a good feeling with it, or saying, either want to work here, or I want to have a good experience with this brand. And you can either choose to shape it or you don't choose to shape it. But regardless, it's not just about like that, just about content. It's about how you shape it holistically, even your process. Like if you've got somebody who's going through a 9-stage interview process with you, they're an opinion about your brand and how that's impacted and about Anna, how that's impacted them, because 9 stages is a ridiculous, but we know it happens. But equally, it's same with something, you know, you've not, someone's applied, they've taken a long time applying for this job, no one's got to them, or no one's responded after an interview, and it, all of that, like it's just going after those little things, which is like, how can we really shape our employer brand? But regardless, people are going to interact with it, so you can choose to keep it or you don't have to.
Yeah, such a good point. And I think experience generally, for whatever reason, can be so overlooked. Like whether it's an external candidate experience of a brand or even employee experience internally. But yeah, just things that you've said there from an external candidate experience perspective. It's funny, kind of, there are so many organizations out there that seem to spend so much money and they have such huge budgets for content. And, you know, it's amazing, like this show-stopping award-winning, amazing stuff that you see. And then, you know, you hear these horror stories of, you know, whether it's a 9-stage interview process or whether it's, you know, a 3-stage process, but there's been like a 3-week gap in between every interview and there's been zero comms for the person, you know, in those massive, you know, chunks in between or whatever it might be. But doubling down, like pushing content to one side sometimes and just thinking, look, we're just going to completely double down on experience, you know, maybe start with candidate experience, map out the entire journey, how we communicate with these people, how do we say it, what's the language we use, you know, are we leading with empathy and all this other stuff, and, you know, are we considering that some people might be in this certain situation and they might be receiving that in the wrong way or whatever it might be. But yeah, it's such a good point, Claire. And I think, yeah, I suppose doubling down on experience is probably, you know, on the point of content, it's probably a good thing to do, isn't it? Like, just push content to one side before we start pumping loads of content. Can we just make sure we've got some fundamental, like, basics in place from an experience point of view?
I think so. I also think what's fascinating is, I know, you know, employee advocacy is pretty much everywhere at the moment. What I really like doing is, when I know a company doesn't have an advocacy program, I like looking up just that company on a social channel and seeing how people talk about it. And some of the most powerful, like, brands that you have got people who will just actively talk about the day at work, their company. If you're doing that, if you've got employees who are doing that, and you know they don't have an employee advocacy program, but they're just doing it off their own back, that's actually really powerful in itself, because you've got people who are actively going, I love working here, or this is my day, or this is a snapshot into what I'm doing. Yeah. And people who are going to apply to a company will do, like, that research. You don't have to always curate stuff. Like, there is, of course, something there if you're going to do an advocacy program where you can take advantage of all of that. But if you've got people talking about you, that's incredible. If you've got people who interact with your posts, whether that's positively or negatively, because let's be honest, if you've got people always being really positive, that's not realistic. It's like wanting to go out with this really polished employer brand all the time and saying, and actually just not saying, this is who we are. The employer brand manager at Bolt did it beautifully, like, the other day, one of my favorite LinkedIn posts, I think, of this year, which was Bolt's asking their employees to come back to the business. Cool. Like, so what? And she talked about, it might not be.
I thought the same, it's amazing, but
if you do want to work here, then you get this, and it's like, it's a great culture, it's a great place to work, but it doesn't have to be a negative thing. But you can be swayed by, like, these big headlines that they're calling people back into the office, it's really negative. And actually, like, even this week, I've been going to networking events. I think remote can be really powerful for some people, but in person can be really powerful for other people. Me, from a personal perspective, I love meeting people because I get so much energy from seeing and talking to other people in person. There's nothing quite like it. There is nothing like it for me, in terms of, you can have a great conversation online, but actually sitting across the table from somebody, actually switching off. When you're online on a remote conversation, your phone buzzes, you can see a little message coming up at the bit. You're going to be distracted regardless, like, no matter what you say. I always have an itch being like, why is my phone buzzing? Who's looking at it? Like, I really want to be like, who's just WhatsApped me?
Yeah.
When I'm in person, that phone stays in the bag. Like, I want to be in present in that moment and just have a really good conversation. And this week I've met so many people, but I've just enjoyed meeting people and, like, just being really present for those conversations.
Yeah.
Just for me, when I'm having those things online, it's not the same. But her post, coming back to the point, really owned it. It really said, well, yes, this is what we're doing, but this is who we are. So if you want to come and work here, fantastic. If you don't, that's okay too. Like, it's really owning that narrative, because you're not going to be perfect, and you don't want to be a company that's for everybody, because who wants to have 100,000 applications all the time?
Yeah.
You want to have the right people that are the right fit for you, in your company, that will help your company grow, and they will grow themselves. Like, that's ultimately what you're trying to do. You're attracting the right people, as we know, but it's how you do it. And content isn't the only way you can do it. I think it could be so much bigger.
Yeah, such a good point. And yeah, and you're absolutely right. It's like, you know, you don't want to be attractive to everybody. That completely like defeats the point of employer branding, doesn't it? Yeah. And it's, you know, it will overload you as well. And, you know, it just creates inefficiencies everywhere. And it completely defeats the point anyway. You're not going to get the right people and attract the right people. But yeah, I saw that post as well. And I must say, I thought exactly the same thing. And there's something really powerful as well in kind of looking at, you know, just using that as an isolated example again, but just like, they've clearly got their shit together. They know who they are. They're comfortable in their own skin. Mm. They're like, yeah, you know, everybody here has always known who we are and what we're all about. If people now have a change of heart and we're not right for them now, they were previously, that's cool as well, because that happens. We change, but this is who we are. This is who we've always been. And you might like it, you might not like it. And yeah, I think you're absolutely right. Like just owning your own truth and living your own values, whatever they may be, won't be for everyone, but for the people it is for, they're going to be magnetized to you way, way more than they probably are, you know, the others out there. So really, really good point. Right. Are you ready for the next myth, Claire?
I am, yeah.
Right. So employer branding is only for large companies.
Yeah, no, it's not. But I think this goes back into this ties into what we were just saying. You've got an employer brand regardless.
Yeah.
I mean, if you just take your concept of your brand is actually the most powerful tool you have. It is like how people interact with it. That's what you can shape. That's what you can influence. But I remember years ago, I worked for a brand agency and there was a fascinating piece of work they did around like the colors of different and what how people interact with different colors and how important they were and the trust of different colors.
Okay.
But all of those things matter. You don't realize that it does. But if someone said Virgin suddenly became blue, you'd be like, what? Because you're so used to Virgin being red. Yeah. And it's all those things which is like you have trust in brands and logos that you identify with, and then you start building that, you know, that trust in it. I think large companies, you know, some of them don't even have employer brand like you. And I think it's not, I think it's for everyone, but it's for everyone in the right way. There'll be a point when you're like, actually, we want to shape this from the outset. I really believe that employer branding's on the same journey as marketing. I think 10 years ago when I was starting out, you know, my career might have been more than 10 years ago, but my career in marketing and marketing was a bit of the nice to have. It was the, you know, CMOs weren't very popular like then. It was a, oh, wow, that company's got a CMO. Whereas now, find me a company that doesn't have marketing like at its very core and its very heart. It's so important.
Yeah.
I think employer branding is not starting to go on that trajectory. There's a lot of work to do, I think, especially around how you truly measure it. And there's a really nice saying, I can't remember who it comes from, but, you know, marketing walk into a room with facts and stats and a spreadsheet and HR comes with a deck. And I think it can be very true. I've written many decks in my time.
Yeah.
Also, it's the how you walk into it, how you own it. I think employer branding can be for everyone, but it's how you want to shape it. And it can be owned by different people. It can be part of something. But it also depends on how important it is on your agenda. Like actually, if you know you're going to be going through a big growth rate or you're a young company, like actually you want to shape how we are in the market, I think it's really important there because you've got an opportunity to do something. If you're more established and you're thinking about how do we turn up, or you've got a complex brand, one that potentially is, you know, big consumer brand, and you need to shape an employer brand from there, it's a different situation, but you still need something that says, okay, here's our brand, but this is how the different ways that people interact with it from a consumer lens and then from an employer lens, because just because people shop with you doesn't mean they want to work for you. Just because people work with you doesn't mean they want to shop with you. So there's a big piece around there, but I think it can be for everyone. Yeah. And it's just how you, again, it comes back to your business purpose, your values, what you want to achieve, what's right for you as a company, and how you really want to hone it, like how you really want to bring it all together.
Yeah, agreed. And that there's probably an argument to say, Claire, that with smaller companies, you know, much smaller companies, could be a, you know, a small startup scale up type business, you know, let alone an SME. But there could be some like distinct employer brand advantages they've got, like in regards to how quickly they can attack a strategy, how quickly they can kind of galvanize the right people to execute, whether it's a campaign or whether it's like an internal piece of, you know, work they're doing or whatever it is relating to the employer brand. But there are a load of advantages that being way smaller and way more nimble, like there's got to be advantages to that as well, hasn't there?
100%. I've been in companies where I've had a blank piece of paper where there's been absolutely nothing before. So it's like you can do whatever you want within the parameters, but you've got this blank piece of paper. And I've been in companies where it's like extremely established and you're forging something, and each of them presents really interesting challenges. Because, and actually I used to be of a camp where I loved the blank piece of paper, and I do, but also I love the other challenge of actually you've got to establish something from something that's also established. That makes no sense. You've got to establish a brand or carve out that employer brand identity where you've got a really established consumer or corporate brand. There's a real interest in both of those. I think with that startup, you've got more of an opportunity to really shape everything from the get-go, but you're really shaping your culture as well. Arguably with a startup, that can actually be harder, because when you're looking at a company that's just really young and have been there with different companies, your culture will change and your culture is constantly shifting, and you're going to get it wrong. It will be like a number of years probably before you really hone in on this is who we are. And I've seen companies go through that growth stage where actually it's been 5 years in where they're like, this is who we are. And they really, really understand exactly who they are, because they've been through that journey of needing to change a bit. And it's actually quite exciting when you can see how companies change, but you have to go through it. Like, and when you're in that startup environment and when it's very small, you probably feel a bit more pain because you're actually doing a lot more, like not just employer branding, a lot more outside of that as well. But you're also on that journey with everyone, so actually you're understanding the culture, you're all in it together, and that's quite a nice mentality to have. Whereas I think even a bigger organizations, you've seen like lots of change curves, you've seen people pull together, but it's a different problem in that you're bringing people on the journey with you. And sometimes you can have very solo teams, sometimes you can have teams who are really engaged with it, but equally you've got to bring people on that journey. And as long as you start doing that, it can be a different problem to solve, but it can also be quite exciting.
Yeah, I can imagine. It's a really good point, actually, because culturally, you know, if you look at the much smaller companies, a startup, you know, as an example, you know, one hire, you know, can have a seismic effect on positive or negative. You know, I'm not saying either way. You know, you'd hope it's positive, but it could also like negatively, couldn't it? One hire like can have such a shift in how that one company operates, and then that all of a sudden, you know, just that seismic shift in culture, obviously that has a massive knock-on effect to employer brand, doesn't it? So yes, good, actually.
Yeah.
Right. So our next myth to debunk. And this is actually our final one as well. Okay, here we go. It matters where employer branding sits in an organization. What are your thoughts about that, Claire?
No, it really doesn't. Sorry. I used to think it did. So I think I've been in my own change with this one. And the reason why I don't think it does anymore is because I think employer branding is maturing as a function.
Yeah.
I think that's really exciting. And as it matures as a function, I think it's got to find its own feet. I think every business is so different. So where it sits will make sense to the business itself. Some companies, it will make sense for it to sit in marketing and comms. But for other companies, it makes sense to sit within the wider talent landscape. And I don't think either is wrong. I think it's how you weave it all together.
Yeah.
I think, am I more comfortable when I see it sitting in talent? Probably, but I don't think it's the be all and end all. And I don't think it should be a blocker to anything either. I think the most important thing is how you actually show the value of what you're doing and how you move into the fabric of everything. for me personally, it probably, as I said, it makes more logical sense for it to be in the wider talent landscape. But that's because the work that you're doing from a logical point of view, and if you're thinking that, you know, content is not everything for it, the work that you're doing hits more talent. Like, you're thinking about who you are and what you're shaping as an employer. So why wouldn't it sit within that talent sphere? Why wouldn't it be something that your chief people officer gets behind, and that's, you know, that's your board champion? That for me makes the most logical sense. But that doesn't mean that someone else shouldn't support it, and it doesn't mean that you shouldn't really be bringing your operational directors or your chief marketing officer on that same journey with you. But your goals are simply, they're different. I think it's how you create the value of what you're doing. That's the most important thing. If you can really show the impact that you're having on a business, the impact that you're creating, the change that you're generating, the ROI. And again, we've, as a whole employer branding industry, that's not right yet. We're not there yet with getting it right. You've got various things going on, various measurements. Even I'm working on some sort of measurement at the moment. But it's always going to be different depending on the company that you actually work for, because again, your measurement's going to be dependent on your business goals, but you'll still have your very standard things like what's happening with the website, what's the heat mapping looking for the website, what's the candidate flow, how many people are signing up to your talent community, how do you reach out to a talent community, what are your metrics on social, which yes can be vanity, but actually how do you take away from the vanity and go, what's my engagement? So actually, do I have an engaged brand? Is that really important? What are the ratings on various platforms? So actually, what are people thinking of us? Like, what's their perception of us? And if I do a campaign tomorrow, will that impact like that perception? If I've got a big consumer brand, will that impact that perception? So that's the other thing. When you're looking at stuff, you've got to be careful not to look at things in silo, because especially if you've got large brands, the more for bigger companies or companies where there's a consumer interaction, anything that happens from a consumer reputation will impact and have a knock-on impact on your employer brand. So how do you measure that? I think that's where you can get interesting stuff in. But I think it's more about how do you really create value, and knowing where you're creating value and then where it makes the most sense for your organization. So I have my view, but everyone will be different. I've seen lots of comments on LinkedIn. Some I may not reply to. But I genuinely don't think it should be a blocker. I don't think where your reporting line is should matter, because if you're letting your leader know the value that you're making, then ultimately you're creating value. And it just depends on where, you know, it should depend on the impact that you're making. So I know the role that I'm in now on a day-to-day basis really impacts on talent and people, and it makes so much sense to sit within that part of the organization. That doesn't mean I'm not working with loads of other people across the organization. I've not connected all those dots, because there are so many dots to connect. But I think it's if you've got really great relationships across the business, if you're going after the right business goals, and ultimately you're going after what matters to the business and showing that value, then it shouldn't be a block when it doesn't matter.
Yeah, it's a great point. And I think, you know, more important than like where employer brand sits in a business is like, you know, regardless of that, you know, is that organization giving you kind of almost autonomy to run your own business as an employer brand function? That's probably what I'd be more concerned about as an employer brand leader, as in, you know, are you going to let me own the strategy, deal with the different stakeholders and business units that I need to deal with to make a success of this? But are you given the autonomy to actually to run this thing, drive this engine and do what needs to be done, regardless of whether it sits in HR, talent, internal comms or whatever? Because let's face it, you know, one company might put it in HR, and that, for whatever reason, that HR leader might have a real thing about employer branding where they just think, you know, personally, oh, that's just a cost. We only need talent. They can just find CVs on job boards and they can solve these problems for us. You know, for whatever reason, they don't buy into what you're doing and your vision. Whereas in a completely different business, it's a completely different kettle of fish, and the mindsets are different. But they're just, we talk about these departments, but really we're just talking about people, aren't we? And we're talking about ethos, mindset, and
I've seen situations where employer brand is nothing more than running a channel or writing content, and that's all the business wants from it, and that's their perception of what employer branding is. And I've seen situations where employer branding is weaved into the very fabric of every part of the organization, and you want to get to the latter. I think that's your, you know, that's your North Star. I think that's incredible if you're doing that and you're getting there. I think that's why you're really making an impact. To do that, really, you should be within your wider talent function, because that's where it's your employer brand, right? But that doesn't mean you're not communicating to your marketing or your comms or whatever, like your counterparts. But if all you're doing is creating content, then why wouldn't you sit in comms or internal comms? I think it just depends as well on the maturity of where you are with your employer brand, but also the maturity of your business. When I say that, I don't mean how old your business is per se. So maybe it's the maturity of your business leaders, but it's more about if they really understand the value that employer branding can add, and they're really behind you, then you'll find that it will be weaved eventually into those different areas, that programs and things that you're doing, they'll all align, because everybody wants to create that one feeling that, like, okay, this is who we are as an employer. This is how we're turning up. This is actually our value exchange when it comes to, like, when you weave in your EVP properly and not just focusing on that attraction piece. Mm. But I wouldn't say that every single leader I've met throughout my career is well versed or like really understands a value that employer branding can make. I've been in situations before where like a board member didn't like, you know, they wanted to have people stories going out on socials. So they said, we want it to be really authentic. So we asked people open-ended questions. They didn't like some of the slightly negative things. I wouldn't even say they were very negative, but they rewrote them. And they said, we don't want someone to say that. We're going to say this instead. And I said, well, that's not quite how it works if you want to be authentic. But it was almost like a bit of authentic and then something else. But for them, employer branding was just about content. Yeah. So it just depends on that maturity piece and actually how important it is to your business and your organization and how far you can take it. But every single business will be different, like regardless of size, regardless of, you know, whether you were formed 2 years ago to, you know, 100 years ago. I think everyone's going to be different, but I think it really comes down to what's the value that you can add. And if you keep adding value, you keep getting investment, and then your teams can grow.
Absolutely. It's a really good point. And I think that you made a point earlier as well around articulating ROI. And we're obviously, as an industry, we're on a journey with that. And, you know, ROI is being demonstrated in lots of areas. But there's still work to be done. And I think you're absolutely right in what you're saying. It's, you know, as that journey, as we go further through that journey and we're able to articulate ROI much easier, because we know employer brand, just if you do it properly and you invest in it properly, the benefits are just enormous. But do you think in some organizations there can be, you know, the problem with employer brand where it's a very small, you know, very lightly funded function that benefits so many parts of the business, but all of the benefits just seem to get dissolved into like other parts of the business, and the credit, if it's done in that way, which is obviously the wrong way, but it's very little credit that's put back into employer brand in that sense. And that's really hard to grow a function like that when it's just seen as this really small like resource hub that's just doing these odd things for people. Do you think that's something that employer brand done in that way can be really difficult, because they're probably not going to grow those employer brand teams to any size, are they, if it's done in that way?
I think it depends on your narrative as well. So the way I think about it, sometimes I see a bit of a trend where you have an employer brand, they want to be an island in the business. So rather than being a puzzle piece in the puzzle, they want to just be their own random shape outside the puzzle. But you're going to be the most effective if you're actually a puzzle piece within the wider puzzle.
Yeah.
Because actually you're part of the bigger picture and you're playing a significant part, and that picture is not formed without you in it. Yeah. And I think it's how do you bring that to life? I think there's so many metrics and things you can go after But I think at the moment there's this dependency on needing to buy in lots of dashboards or buy in lots of things, because there's loads of work. I've seen so many things happening at the moment in terms of lots of people doing so many, and it's great thinking around how you can measure it, but it's still all different. It's like one person's doing it this way, another person's doing it that way, and someone else has got it this way. Whereas I think if you just take the standard metrics of marketing, they're all the same. Like they have the same things. It's how do you really create something which does not require a paywall as a starting point, but equally you can do it on your own. Like you don't need to rely on something else to be able to generate it. You can go, this is how I'm measuring it. I think for me personally, that's probably more of the holy grail, because then you're really allowing, like, you know, that self-sufficiency. You're saying I can do this on my own. Then if you want to like enhance it, you can do all those other things. But it's saying, here's just a standard way of doing it that's easy. This is the stuff that, you know, that's straightforward. Here's a process for it. And if I want to do these different things, here's the other stuff. But I think there's so many different products or solutions or things out there. That's great. Oh, but I've got to pay to have that particular solution. I've got to pay to have that. And actually, I'd love to see something where lots of people come together and it's like, let's have a brainstorm and how can we just create something rather than just monetize it and take away the monetary bit of it. How as an industry can we just come together to create something that benefits everybody? And just, you know, it's more collective problem solving to say, well, we could do this and we could do that, and this works for a big company but that might work for a small company. But you come away thinking, I know what I need to do to measure my brand. Like you come away from it with that kind of feeling. That for me could be quite exciting. Whether there's a maturity to do something like that, I don't know. I think that, you know, when you bring lots of people into a room and you have a really fun brainstorm and you come up with something and it's just something that you can do, I think that's exciting. Because the other thing is, not everybody's got a massive budget, you know, and you want to be able to do things on your own. Like you want to be able to say, I can generate this and I can pull off that. And I think that would be brilliant. But it's just sort of saying, well, if you make it not a product and make it something that's an enhancement where you've got collective thinking and collective minds coming together, the art of the possible could be endless, because the people and the minds and that you have working in employer branding are brilliant. But imagine if you take all of that out of companies for a day and you just put it all together, you could create something that's amazing. But it's whether people want to do it.
Yeah, that's such a good point, though. But yeah, people, you know, employer brand leaders coming together, collectively talking about these things and coming up with solutions, that's how these things get solved far quicker, isn't it? It's got to be. And like you said on the very first point around blueprints, you know, all of this stuff's really personal to the journey that you're on in that particular company as well. It's like the metrics that are important in that type of business that serves that type of industry that has got that type of goals, probably really different to what's going on over here with that company and leader and stuff. So again, it's there's a lot of personal kind of, you know, goals and that type of thing going on at play, aren't there, with different scenarios?
Yeah. And I think that can be the beauty of it as well. You've got, you know things that will work, you know, you've got your different skills. And I think coming back to that very first bit, if you just know how to adapt, then you're always going to have like this set of, like, it's a bit like your toolkit. You've always got this toolkit, but you're just going to leverage bits here and there. But ultimately, you'll always be successful. You just got to know what you're dialing up and what you're dialing down.
Yeah, 100%. 100%. Claire, thank you so much for that. I think we put the employer brand well to rights in about 45 minutes. But no, thank you so much. It was great. I really enjoyed that. So look, just to wrap up, we do this at the end of every episode. And it's one quick fire question to you, if you don't mind. So for anybody listening, what advice would you give them to avoid being employer bland? Play on words, podcast name, you probably get it. But what advice would you give? How do you avoid being employer bland?
Don't listen to what everyone else is doing on social. You will always see people shouting great things about their programs and doing amazing things, and that's brilliant. But just because somebody else is doing it doesn't mean you need to do it. So always remember to follow what you're doing and go on your path, and it will take as long as it takes. You don't need to rush something. And remember, behind every success story that people will put out there, you don't know how long it's taken them to get to that point either. So it's just keep following your path and what's right for you as an organization and for the employer brand that you're trying to create.
Love that. And such a nice way to wrap up the chat as well.
But thanks, Claire, for having me.
Yeah, thank you so much. I really, really appreciate it. As you know, I've been trying to get you on for ages and it's been well worth the wait. So yeah, thank you so much for joining me. It's been really lovely catching up.
It was brilliant. Thank you.
All right. Take care, Claire. Bye.
Bye.